says, whichever one you're choosing to believe. All I know is what's in my head. Everyone's my fellow human being. There's good folks here and bad folks too. And everyone makes choices every day.
Tēnā koto, tēnā koto, tēnā koto katoa. This is Greg Pressland on Red Radio, and we're beaming today from my home via the internet into Shane's home. And with me in a digital sense is Shane Henderson, Waitakere Ward Councillor for Auckland Council. Kia ora, Shane. How are you?
Kia ora, Greg. I'm good, mate. Good. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm getting used to this different lifestyle, and I think in the future I might have to think about doing things slightly differently.
So, that's Shane, right. I reckon I can really get used to working in Te South instead of the central city, if I'm honest.
Yeah, not having to commute to work is such a blessing, isn't it?
That's right.
Makes you wonder why we do it. Okay, you're a first-time councillor, previously chair of the Henderson-Massey local board, and you're also deputy chair of the finance committee. And you've been in place now for 6 months, haven't you?
That's right. So I think, to be honest, like any new job, you're sort of getting your feet under the table a little bit over the first little while. But 6 months in, I'm feeling pretty good now about how we can operate and you know, get some good stuff for the West. So, and that's what we're all about. So yeah, pretty excited about it all.
And I'm sure you had no idea what you were letting yourself in for when you got elected. I mean, who could have foreseen the situation that we're in now?
No, that's right. I'd set my watch to a much different term to this one, I'm sure. And I was hoping for a term where we were just sort of accumulating reasonably quietly and just getting some runs on the board, as we say, and just chipping away at a lot of the things that we need to do out west. But, you know, the flip side to what is actually, you know, a tragedy, let's face it, but there is an opportunity here for us to do some good things and actually rebuild our communities in a better way. So actually it's a real privilege to be elected at this time, I think.
Yeah, certainly there are very distinct opportunities, aren't there? There's that old Chinese saying about Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. But also the Chinese word for crisis is also opportunity. So you're certainly...
I didn't know that. That's brilliant.
And there are
in the office, I've been calling it a Christ opportunity before I had to leave the office.
So COVID-19 has had a profound effect on everything that council's doing right now, hasn't it?
It sure has.
Wellington syndicated a likely $70 million hit to its income. And I suspect for Auckland, the figure would be even worse.
Yeah, so... in terms of the effect on what council's doing, council, I think, have done a fantastic job because they really had to rally in a very short time and change completely how the organisation was run and what different responsibilities and workloads people have. And the scale of the pace of change has been just amazing. So goodness, where do you begin with all of this stuff? For starters, people obviously can't go into work anymore, and there was some encouragement to work from home for weeks before the shutdown actually as well. And you know, even local neighborhood things where, for example, we can't play on playgrounds anymore and opening our libraries and community centers and all the rest of it. Basically the council of now is a completely different beast to the council of last month in terms of it operates. And I want to just thank everybody and shout out to everybody that made that big change because it was such a big undertaking. I like to say that we're still working hard. We're just working in a different way to try and serve people. So that's kind of one of the effects of how it's all changing. But you touched on the income side of things, and that's actually quite a scary situation. Depending on how it shakes down, we could be looking at some losses, and I've seen a conservative figure of around 100 million, but it could be more. So we're kind of waiting for more figures and more advice on where we're actually going to land, and then we're going to look at that and just see what we can do with it. So my message to people basically is just stay calm. It's all good. We got it under control. might just take a little bit of a while and a bit of a conversation with the community as we go on how we respond.
So it opens up big philosophical discussions though, doesn't it? Around about half of council's income comes from fees and charges. And I can imagine that side of the income stream being taking a pretty severe battering over the next 6 to 12 months. So fiscally, there's going to be a rather big hole, isn't there?
Yeah. Look, it's quite funny. I think we've really been trumpeting how fiscally prudent we are. And actually, we are, to be honest. But having 47% of rates income and 53% of user charges and fees, things like when you pay to go into a swimming pool or when you pay to go on the bus, et cetera, et cetera. 53% of income is that. And so when people aren't using libraries and buses and community centres and all the rest of it, then that can take a pretty significant hit. And so what is fiscally responsible has actually come back to bite us a little bit. So we'll see how much the bite is as we go. Yeah, that's kind of the picture of where we're at.
So there's always the two temptations, and the first one is to cut budgets until you get down to some sort of equilibrium. But every Keynesian economist in the world will be saying that public institutions have to be counter-cyclical. That is, when economies go south, they start spending, and that way societies can get through these sorts of shocks without too much damage. So do you see councillors having a Keynesian role?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting question. I think obviously philosophically I completely and totally agree. And you look at history, for example, the Depression was a really good example of where governments started cutting and cutting and cutting and cutting. And you go from muscle to sinew to bone, and then you can't cut anymore. And people got out of the Depression by spending and public works programs and things like that. And we've seen that across the world in different contexts as well. So, yeah, I'm totally on board with all of that thinking. Where council differs slightly is that we've got a more limited ability to actually borrow than central government. So I think we do have a role in injecting fuel into the economy. I really believe that. That's got to be balanced by council's ability to do it. And kind of being fiscally responsible over medium and long term as well. So I think there is a balance there, but to answer your question directly, yeah, I think we should be getting people in work, staying in work, and getting people back to work. So yeah, that's one of the approaches I'll take.
So you're referring to council and its debt ceiling of 270% of debt to income ratio. So the question probably at this time is that a hard and fast target, or is it something that Auckland Council should think about getting rid of, because we do live in quite unusual times?
Yeah, no, I totally understand it, because personally, I think that it's a really conservative target when we're dealing with a really responsible lender, which is safe and guaranteed backed by people, basically, in a way that private companies really aren't. And so we're 270 in Auckland, and we're actually 250 in smaller councils. I've just lost my train of thought.
So going back to the 270%, and you're quite right to point out the approach of debt agencies to councils' finances. I mean, it's a privately imposed target, isn't it? It's what the debt agencies are comfortable with. But times like now, public institutions are pretty gilt-edged in investments, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah. So, my young son has just woken up out there, so he's just rocking. So we do have a debt ceiling, which is basically that councils get given a credit rating like everybody else, and if you breach the debt ceiling, then nominally there is a possibility of a credit downgrade, which actually affects our interest rates and the way that we repay our debt over time. And it's something that on the face of it we do have to comply with, in my view, But that doesn't mean that more discussions can be had around the number of the ceiling and what can be done there. So I think we've got a very good financial team in place, and they'll be looking at that and trying to work with that, I would say. So that's kind of where we're at.
And just as a further example, the government itself had its fiscal responsibility rules, but they've been well and truly torn up, haven't they?
Yeah, that's right. And I remember there was a lot of criticism around the budget responsibility rules from some. And I think we're seeing that, you know, that might have been good to hold fast at that time, because now we've got a rainy day now. And so we're able to spend during that rainy day. So it's actually worked out pretty well, I think, for the government. And really happy for us too.
And what about the other aspect of this rates? We are going to have a number of families in fiscal stress. And there are entities such as the Taxpayers Union calling on a freeze of rates increases. And while normally I don't have any truck with any of their ideas, we have to acknowledge that there will be families under extreme stress, don't we?
Of course, yeah. I mean, people are doing it tough. There's no question about that. And it looks like our economy is heading into a dip, and that means that there's a chance of more unemployment and more people struggling than before. And, you know, even going into the crisis, there were people doing it tough then as well. So Mayor Phil Gough has come out in the media and said that, look, they're not going to back anything over and above a planned rates increase. And currently the planned rates increase is 3.5% as per the annual budget. I want to acknowledge people have been contacting me about this, just in our ward as well in Waitakere, about the idea of freezing rates, because I know people are doing it tough, that is true. But the flip side of all of this is Wellington City Council are actually looking at, as we're going to record today, I think they're going to talk about it this afternoon, but they've been advised that if they were to freeze rates this year, they would be looking at $16 million of extra debt. But also, most alarmingly, a 15% rates increase the next year. So there is some argument that really you're kicking the can down the road, and the pain will really be felt in the years following. So, you know, I've been quite clear with my community that actually I don't personally support a rates freeze. You know, I do understand people and their situations, but at the same time, we need to be responsible, and we need to make sure that rates are manageable over the medium and long term as well as this year.
So it's quite a quandary though, isn't it? Your job, if you want to accept it, is spend up large, keep people in jobs, get major projects underway, not breach the council's debt ceiling, and provide some sort of assistance to families in need.
Yeah. It's a tough gig. And through it all, in all of those processes, we need to be working really closely with local boards, such as yourself, and with the local community as well. And there's a lot of competing and differing opinions out there too, that we've got to balance. So it's a pretty tough gig. But I think we're up to the task. I think we're going pretty well. Just the other thing, I've got a really good example of the kind of balances that we've had to do. And this is pre-COVID-19, right? I've always been a huge fan of putting on more public transport, and you and I both really support public transport going to Piha in particular, but there's other communities too. So in Auckland Transport, we're looking at having to put on more bus routes, more buses to the routes that are existing, and also to try and pay our drivers more as well. And so those are three competing demands within a fiscal envelope that's very hard. So you could look at any department and think, goodness, we've got a lot of demands on us. We've got to find the money. So, it is a challenge.
Can we talk about the council-central government relationship? Firstly, the central government's response, I think, has been very quick and very targeted. For instance, the wage subsidy payments, without those, we would see horrendous levels of unemployment right now. And so they've managed to turn what could have been a crisis into something which is more manageable. But the next 12 months is going to be very important, isn't it? There's the prospect of unemployment ballooning, and we really do need authorities to step up and start creating jobs, basically. And that,
yeah,
leads,
totally.
That leads me to the government's infrastructure spend up, where they're talking about shovel-ready projects with a cost of $10 million or more. And that presents Auckland Council, and particularly the West, with a few opportunities, doesn't it?
Sure does. Goodness. West Auckland has needed so much big-ticket infrastructure spend. It was pretty daunting, actually, to kind of take office 6 months ago and look at the shopping list that we have. It's very long. And to look at the wallet that we're given, and it's pretty empty. So I think this is actually a huge opportunity, and it sort of goes to what I was saying earlier, that we can actually rebuild our town centres and rebuild our communities in ways that are climate sustainable, that promote local jobs, that do a lot of great stuff. And it's stuff that we kind of needed to do before, but with the government's infrastructure spending, we want to capture as much of that in West Auckland, actually, because we really need it.
So, yes, can we talk about climate change for just a minute?
Yeah, of course.
The one problem I see with the policy is it talks about shovel-ready projects, and they're going to tend to be road projects, whereas right now is the perfect opportunity for everyone to start building sustainable transport networks and getting ready for the next couple of decades. Whereas if we keep building roads, we're going to waste that opportunity, aren't we?
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there looking at their garages and their cars and thinking, goodness me, I don't want to go back to driving to the city every day. You know, I want a different option. Yeah,
I'm gonna ride my bike. Cool. Yeah, ride my bike or walk. Yeah,
totally. I'd rather walk down to Glenelg Town Centre, do my work there.
So when Auckland Council helps formulate this list with government, are they going to put climate change projects as a major consideration in terms of what should be happening?
Yeah, so I can only kind of speak to the council side of it, but Auckland Council, I think, will be giving a direction around climate change, because that's certainly the kaupapa that we're on board with, and a lot of talk with colleagues at the moment around, basically we need to be doing this in 100% climate change, really sustainable way. And that, you know, that's what we're all about. So, yeah, that's going to be the direction I think we'll be signalling. That's one that I'll be signalling anyway. And I'm sure I'll get some good support for that.
Sure. And the West Pacific projects, in the past you have championed the Western Busway and extensions to Waitakere Hospital.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll get as much of a push as you can give them.
We're hoping. Yeah, goodness. So, talking about people are just on the streets at the moment. It's just so wonderful. When you go out for your exercise and stuff, you see people walking and cycling everywhere, barely a car to be seen. And that's so nice. I think when we get back into things properly, we need to also be looking at public transport. You know, why can't we all take the bus when we can? And on that note, there are huge, huge communities with, you know, over 100,000 people catchment, and the bus is not feasible at the moment. So we're pushing hard for our Northwestern Busway, which will service all the way along Te Aritu, Massey, Rosebank, you know, all the way up to Kumeu, hopefully. I think that's desperately needed. It's been needed for a long time, so we'll be giving that a big push. The other thing that we want to push is, you know, every West Aucklander will tell you, you know, no disrespect to people in the North Shore that might be listening, but Westies do not like going up there for hospital treatment. So ideally, we want as much as we can in Waitakere Hospital, and it desperately needs an upgrade and more services. So we're fighting really hard for that, and I've written a letter of support for that application for the DHB, and I'm really optimistic because the plans have already been drawn up, it's all ready to go. Just need some guys with shovels to rock on down there. And so let's get it done, I say. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I was pleased that we received a briefing from them recently, and they had their application up and running and sent down to Wellington last month.
Yeah.
So hopefully they qualify as being shovel ready.
Yeah, definitely shovel ready. I can tell you that.
So can I urge council support for the Waitaki Rangers local board green maze plan.
Most of
it's not quite shovel ready, but a lot of it's manageable. And another thing to think about is the predator-free projects and our war on weeds out west. They're labor-intensive, low capital requirements, and pretty well shovel ready in that you don't need consents really for them. And that's another area that where there could be jobs created very quickly and very important work completed.
Yeah, and I mean, the direction from the government is that we've got it's all about jobs, really. The infrastructure spend is ideally going to give you lots of good things, but the first and foremost consideration is jobs in the short term. So, if it does create jobs, that's a really good thing.
And one last one, the faux coastal walkway, which is something that you've worked on in the past, and I'm a trustee of the trust. it's another one that's pretty well ready to go. So it just needs a bit of money and capital.
That's good news. That's good news. Yeah, I was just talking to some colleagues about that last night. I think it's a good one. Let's flip the script here, Greg. So can I ask you about the Greenways plan? So tell me a bit more about what you're wanting to accomplish, because obviously you're chair of the local board here in Waitaki Rangers. Are there any projects falling out of that? And talk me through it a bit more.
The Greenways plan is a network of different walkways and cycleways that are required to join up existing paths and make it very simple for people to walk around and cycle around and to provide people with an alternative to cars. It's all done and dusted and finished. It's not cycle ready though, one of our big projects would be a cycleway from Sunnyvale to Glen Eden. It's relatively easy to build. It's on basically Crown and Rail land. But we just need to get a design done and get it started.
Yeah, so that's good.
In the brave new world of climate change, where we want people out of cars, I think local greenways plans are going to be absolutely vital tools in making sure that that reliance is reduced.
Absolutely, yeah. And good on your board for doing that. I think that's really forward thinking, really good work. I mean, I was on the Northwestern Cycleway yesterday, just did a bit of a loop around Te Aritu and back where I live. And goodness, what amazing infrastructure. That's great. I mean, if you can cycle and you're within a reasonable distance, then, you know, there's really no reason not to do it. And so all these projects around the Waitaki Ranges, I think, would be really good. So, well done.
Yeah, we've already got a number of good cycle tracks, but they're not joined up. And it's creating the network, which is the next important step.
Filling the gaps.
Yeah. Shall we move on? Next thing I wanted to talk about was Council's humanitarian response to the crisis. And I gather that there's been a considerable ramp up of help given for homeless people.
Yeah. I'm really proud of Council's leadership in this role. Really, through the COVID-19 menace, it was our most vulnerable that are actually most vulnerable to COVID as well as everything else. And when things get disrupted, then there are downstream implications for people in terms of their food and their well-being. And so there needed to be a big plan and a big response in terms of helping our community, our homeless communities out, making sure they're okay. So council have done some great work, and even council officers are cooking meals for the homeless. Isn't that amazing?
I think
it's the sort of leadership you really want from your local government. I'm really glad we could provide it.
And I believe that police and NGOs have, with council assistance, they've established a number of rental accommodations for homeless people. And the job is to get them straight into a home now.
Yeah. And actually, NGOs is a good point. We need to acknowledge the kind of hard mahi that's been done on the ground for years and years for people working in the homeless sector. I'm pretty sure they don't get paid a huge amount to do some very important work. And actually that work has really borne fruit now, where a lot of people have built relationships up within the homeless community locally here in West Auckland, so that when a crisis like this hits, then click your fingers and we can help the homeless community because we know where they are and we know who they are and we know what their needs are. So I just want to acknowledge those NGOs for their good work too.
Sure. Council working alongside NGOs always gets the best result, doesn't it?
Sure does. Sure does.
And Council's got a hotline now for people who are striking major problems getting food.
Yeah. So as the crisis looks like it deepens and as we go through the four-week lockdown period, then yeah, there's people struggling. So it's really good that we could do that. And I know there's been a huge take-up in West Auckland in particular of people that really need the help. So well done, I think.
Yeah, I was told on the first day that the hotline had 1,000 calls, which is heartening, but also a sign of how things are going to develop, I guess.
Isn't it sad? It's sad to see the kind of state of affairs laid out like that. But yeah, there were plenty of people struggling before the crisis. I'm glad that we could do our bit.
Okay, we've got about 4 minutes left, so just a couple of other quick topics. We've also got a looming water crisis, don't we? I understand dams are now about half full, when normally they'd be more like three quarters full. these other issues that arrive on your plate day to day, they can be all encompassing, can't they? And
when it rains, it pours, so to speak.
Yeah. So, is council ready to take urgent action on that, or are we keeping our fingers crossed at this stage and see what happens when we get to winter?
Oh yeah, definitely. So Watercare, I've been told, are really on the ball on this. This is their primary focus, is to deal with the water supply. I wouldn't kind of characterise it as a crisis just yet, but it's true that the dams are way below where they normally are. And there's no significant rain forecast in the next short while either. So we're reaping the benefit in terms of our exercise during the lockdown period, but we really need some rain. So what we're saying at the moment is to just be water-wise, just be a bit conscious of how you're using your water. Maybe don't take 20-minute showers and that kind of stuff. And people with teenagers might struggle with that a little bit. But yeah, just watching your water intake at this point and just keep an eye out for the news. If this kind of deepens into something that requires a really serious response, then we all stand ready. It's just a matter of communication. So yeah, just keep an eye out, I'd say.
Sure. And one final question. Zoom and Skype meetings are now the norm, aren't they?
We're handling this over Zoom.
Have you detected a change in the sort of tenor of day-to-day politics? You know, people more respectful now and more respectful of each other?
Oh, I think over the whole term here, to be honest, people have been more focused on collegiality and getting together and getting things done. There was a bit of a tiring of the politics as usual, and we can kind of see that at a central government level where people are really annoyed with certain National Party figures, frankly, coming out and playing politics in times like these. And at a council level, we're focused on just getting the job done. I'm really actually encouraged by the relationships, not just during COVID, but before COVID as well. So I think we're standing in good stead to do some good work over the next term.
And it'll be interesting to see how long it lasts. And I suspect most people would hope that it does last.
Yeah. Well, I've got to say, I've been really enjoying the family time at home. It's been nice.
And so on that note, I think we're just running the clock out right now. So can I thank you, Shane? Can I wish you and your family the best of health? And we all live in interesting times. And I'm sure we'll talk again about in the very, very near future about the issues that the West is facing.
So yeah, good to hear from you. Stay safe, everybody.
Yeah. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou.